Reggie.
Reggie. Sarah Fraser, your host. Today's show is a little bit different, although hopefully very authentic to who I am, because if you've been listening to me for a long time, you know that I always have open conversations, and sometimes those conversations involve actions that I've made. So today, over the past 10 days, I'll say this first, I've done a lot of reflecting in my life, thinking, and just kind of been overwhelmed, I think, in a lot of ways, of stepping back and thinking about my actions. And by now, I'm sure you guys have all seen the video that went viral about my comments on 17-year-old Michael Brown, who is an exceptional student from Houston, Texas, who got accepted to 20 Ivy League schools, full rides to all of them. And so that video went viral. I made an apology to Michael last week on Twitter. That was where I could find him. I apologized to Michael, and I apologized to his mom in a Facebook message. That was a private conversation. I asked them to be on the podcast, but I know they're very busy and Michael has a lot on his plate. But I wanted to today address that and have an open conversation about the emotion around it, the reaction around it. And really today, the intention of this show is for me to listen, learn, and take action so I don't do something like that again, because I've just been so emotionally torn up about it. I'm not going to get emotional, hopefully. I don't want any empathy. I want to learn from this mistake. So today on my show, I have two women who have very strong voices in the community and are activists in their own rights and have great media careers. So my first guest is Shauna Renee. She is the creative director of Say It Out Loud. And she's also best known as the host and executive producer of Coco Mode, a weekly national radio show on Sirius XM. She's also the daughter of famous radio personality Joe Madison, civil rights activist himself. Joe has been on this show, Shauna.
Yes, that's what I hear. And he had a good time, apparently.
Back when I was at the comedy club, mm-hmm. So he was there. And then also Hillary Younger is a voice that you're very familiar with. She has been on the show many times and knows me somewhat, but we're just kind of new friends. I wanted a perspective of someone I just met and talked to Shauna over the weekend. You obviously know me a little bit better. Yeah. But you are also a former TV reality show star for Design Stars, expert on Black Twitter. We'll talk about that.
And I am Black Twitter.
You are Black Twitter. And you're also currently an interior designer, a very good one at that, here in Washington, D.C. So I'm not going to replay the video because I think obviously by now everyone's seen it. It's been seen millions of times. But the setup essentially was the discussion of Michael Brown's accolades. And I had asked the question in this segment of, is it ridiculous for this kid to apply to 20 colleges? So, Shauna, tell me this. You live here in D.C. as well.
Yes.
And you watch Channel 5 every day. What was your reaction when you saw that?
I was like, oh, can I curse? I was like, oh, shit, they are in trouble. That was my first reaction. I was like, oh, my God, I cannot believe they just said that. I was like, oh, this is going to be a problem. That's what I told my husband. I said, this is going to be a problem. And I just kind of sat back and I waited. And it took maybe about 6 or 7 hours. It was later on in the day before the first friend that I had posted the video and said, can you believe that these girls actually said this? And then I went back and started to do some research. But I knew immediately. I mean, as soon as the word obnoxious left, I don't know if it's your mouth or Holly's mouth, whoever's mouth uttered the word obnoxious, I knew in that moment that this was going to be a problem.
Right.
Because, you know, and I think my visceral reaction was probably the same as everyone else's, which is, wow, here we are in a position to celebrate this young man who has done something that I don't believe anyone in this room or maybe in this building has accomplished, which is to not only apply for 20 of the best schools in the country, but actually be accepted and then offered a scholarship.
Well, Shauna, I was actually number 3 in my class, so I just didn't apply. I knew I was coming to Howard, but go ahead. I'm going to let you finish.
Okay, because see, that wasn't the case for me. See, I applied to 2 schools and got into 1 by the skin of my nose, and that's only because, you know, my verbal scores were great because my math were in the toilet.
But 1490 on my SAT.
Okay, girl, see, that wasn't me.
You did?
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Thanks for you. Google that too.
That's brilliant.
I probably have a news article about that.
Oh, that's
as well.
Wonderful.
Look
been
at
in
you.
How obnoxious. No, just joking.
Very much so. But the point very much so at this point, that's a word you can use for me, not for Michael. Yeah.
But I thought, yeah, exactly. So my visceral reaction was like, wow, why would we even do this? And where does this even come from? So it was, I have to admit, I was disappointed. I was disappointed in one of your co-hosts. I was really actually very disappointed with Allison's reaction, only because I knew that she had gone to Hampton. I know some folks who are very close to her. So I know her. And not I don't know her, but I'm saying sure. I know of her. And then one of your other co-hosts, I kind of was like, oh, okay, this is sort of par for the course for Holly. And then I was just like, okay, I don't really know Sarah very well. I don't know much about her. So I'm not really sure where she stands on any other issue. But wow, what a foolish thing to say. And I just kind of sat back and let it do its thing. And right. it grew and it grew and it grew and it grew. And then, you know, I just kind of the more and more I started thinking about it, I was like, wow, this is really a very unfortunate misstep. And when our mutual friend Amanda
right.
called me and said, would you be willing to speak to her? Initially, I was like, I don't know.
No, you're
I
not alone.
I was like, I'm not sure because I don't really know what to say to her. I don't know her. And I can only tell her the truth. And I don't want to offend her or upset her. But what I have to say may. And Amanda's like, no, she really wants to hear from you. Talk to her. So you and I spoke. And I told you the truth about, you know, what I thought about the situation.
Yeah, yeah, you did. And that's what I really wanted to talk about, because it's listening over the past 10 days, which is really what I've needed to do and what I'm going to do today, is I really heard people basically saying African-American men can't win no matter what they do. And that broke my heart, because it's like, that is not the person that I am. I don't want to be perpetuating that in any way. And so I've had to really step back and go, okay, what was the intention for me saying that and setting that story up? And the problem was, there wasn't any intention. You know, there wasn't any thought into that. And I appreciated everything that you told me when we spoke. And you said a lot of people aren't going to forgive you. They're tired of the apologies, which I want to talk about, because I want to know, as to with my white privilege, like, how do you move forward and not have it happen again? Because I thought that I wasn't ignorant, you know, but that wasn't the case, because there wasn't any thinking that went into that.
Right. And to acknowledge the depths of your privilege, that it didn't even occur to you.
Right.
That it didn't even occur to you that bringing the story up or approaching the story from that perspective could be hurtful or problematic. See, it would never have occurred to me, even if the question was whether or not 20 schools is too much. It would have never occurred to me to approach the story from the perspective of is this brilliant child obnoxious for taking advantage of every single opportunity that he earned? It right. would never have occurred to me. So that's part of the privilege, is to not even think that that would be, not even to consider that that would be problematic.
And Hillary, before you start, sorry to interrupt you, but before you start, one of the other things too significant about having you on is you're from Texas.
I am from Texas, and I am familiar with the high school that this kid attended. And I think that I wanted to touch on that before we got too far away from where we are. I think the other significant thing to point out about the privilege is that the company that you were in already is branded. You know, you're on Fox. I go on Fox. I do segments on Fox all the time. And I'm very aware of who I'm dealing with and who I'm entertaining, you know, and also who works here. I mean, that's the reality of it. And so when you kind of use the word, it was like, oh my God, it was a fucking trampoline.
Right.
For the anchor who wanted to, like, say something negative about the kid. But let's speak to Michael's situation, because one thing that I do want to bring up is, you know, implicit bias and, you know, all of the things that come up in this whole push to create this idea and identity of inferiority regarding Black people. Like, first of all, I get very confused about it, because you cannot both be inferior and a threat at the same time. Like, that's the confusing part for me. So this kid who applied to 20 schools, who probably is first generation college student, his mother didn't go to college. We don't know anybody in his family. We don't even know what his reach is. I grew up in an urban school. I went to Lincoln High School. I'm almost positive we played them in basketball or football at some point. And this school is in a community that is underserved. Education is like, I mean, the counselors are probably dealing with girls who are, you know, teen mothers. Some kids may have gotten, you know, shot over here. Who knows what's going on at this right. school? So this one kid who was looking at it like, I'm scholastically able and capable of accomplishing something. And I know that I want better for myself. But I don't have anybody around me. You can ask your dad. My dad's passed away. But I could ask my dad. You can ask your dad. There's certain questions that you can ask. He doesn't have anyone in his immediate reach to ask. So my whole thing, when I saw him apply to 20 schools, I was like, that's wild. First of all, first thing I thought was like, I hope he got waivers, because that's a lot of $45 applications. But in the event that he didn't, that means that somebody poor sacrificed $45 at least 20 times for him to get into college, because they were saying, you're not going to miss this opportunity. We don't know what we need to do, but we're going to do everything that we can do to make sure that this happens. So I saw it as caution. I saw it as him saying, like, I don't know how this process works, but I'm not going to miss this opportunity. So if I don't get into this school, then I'll get into this one. If I don't get into this school, I get into this one. This is a 17-year-old kid. So his rationale and thought process for me came into play, because I'm thinking, like, if I was a kid and I didn't know anyone to ask, then I probably would have done the same thing and pick all of them.
Here's the interesting thing.
Right. Tell
us
about that.
So my father on his show, I don't know if it was on the show, but I know he's had a conversation with Michael Brown's mother. And she explained, she told him, and then he since shared the conversation with me. And that was, number one, he has been very independent and has taken responsibility for his own education. Right. Not taken responsibility, but has wanted more for himself. She said since he was about in the sixth grade.
Right.
So this is a child who consistently, from the time he was 11 or 12 years old, knew that he was talented, knew that he was smart, and knew that there was potential. He was also part of a smaller cohort in this school of brilliant young men.
Right.
And
right.
there was a counselor there who was with them, encouraging them. So while maybe in his larger community, you're right, he didn't have the kind of support that maybe you and I,
right.
you know, have enjoyed or were able to enjoy, he certainly did have some support. And there were other children like him. And that's important. Number one, I use the word children, because
right.
like you said, they are children.
They're children.
Right. They are children. And there were others. So there are more than one, you know, brilliant young child of color in
right.
this high school, in this town, and in this world.
In this whole world. Let's just
in this
be
world.
That's why I had to bring up, like, 14, can I say it again? 1490 on my
yes.
SAT back in the 90s.
Right. So but right. So the
but
fact is, so here
90s.
We are in a room now
right.
among the three of us with one who almost got an, you know, perfect score on the SAT. So it's there. They exist. The other thing is, he was working with a counselor, and I did not know that this was the case, but this information came from Dave Thomas, who is the new president of Morehouse College, was a professor, or I think the dean of Georgetown Business School, right up the street from where we are, and also was a professor at Harvard. So he knows all about college admissions.
Definitely.
He knows how the process works. He says now there is a program that a lot of young people are taking advantage of, which allows them to upload their information one time. So their scores, one or two essays, their grades, public or community service
right.
activities, and then they upload it one time, and the program then will allow them
generate
to apply
to the
right
university,
to shoot it.
To the institution.
So you just essentially check which one of those universities you want to
right.
apply to. Children, again, they're children.
Check
these
all the
days,
boxes.
You know, are checking as many boxes as possible.
Right.
So the thing that makes Michael Brown not obnoxious but extraordinary is the fact that he got into all of them and got a scholarship
right,
to
right.
all of them. He is not alone in applying for 20 schools. There are kids who
why
have applied for
Michael,
35.
Why can't Michael Brown cast a wide net? If you're that was my whole thing. I was like, I looked at it like the kid was just casting a wide net. He's like, I mean, I'm going to just, why not
yeah.
check all of them? I like them all. I don't know. Like, whatever.
And he should
and
be
pick.
Able to. Yeah, exactly.
And I'll pick.
Exactly.
Why do I have to narrow it down? Like, I mean, I don't know those the people's children who you were talking to, but I mean, I can only imagine. I mean, your kid may be an underachiever. She probably is. Like, I mean, privilege takes you far. Like, just the fact that you are what you are can just elevate you to places where you don't actually belong. Because I talk to a lot of people on a daily basis, and I think I said this to you on the phone, who I think are I honestly don't respect their aptitude at all. And they're in places and they have positions of leadership,
right,
and they get to say their opinions and do all, on a daily basis on public platforms. And I think that they're stupid. And the reality is for her, I mean, to use a word like obnoxious, I mean, at this point in my life, I can be obnoxious. But I don't think that using that word for a kid like Michael Brown was appropriate. I definitely right. don't think it was
no,
appropriate.
And, but I mean, we heard it.
Was it was actually
I've heard
disrespectful.
It.
Right.
And I think
right.
that's what I was trying to say.
Right. And even in obnoxiousness. Yeah. I mean, to, you know, you all are journalists. And so, and we all are to a certain degree. We're media personalities. So we have to have a command of the English language. So we have to choose our words carefully.
Definitely.
So even when we use a word like obnoxious, I knew I had a negative visceral reaction to it. And I said to you, well, let me go back and see what obnoxious really means. Mm-hmm. Because we'll use it one way, but it means something else. Offensive. Dreadful, repulsive, revolting, mm-hmm. repellent, disgusting, vile. Why? Why mm-hmm. would anyone use a word that means vile and disgusting and repulsive to describe any person,
right.
any human being? It doesn't matter. But a brilliant person, child, yeah. African-American child, young man, like, you know, that the last word that I would use is vile. So, you know, sometimes I, when we talked about apologies before, I'm like, you know, sometimes I'm not really into apologies, because the thing is what are you apologizing for exactly? Are you apologizing for not having a, and I'm not talking just about you.
No.
I'm talking about everybody on that panel. You know, the thing is, are you really apologizing for getting caught? Are you apologizing for not having command of the language in a way that you should? Are you apologizing for not thinking, not checking your privilege? What are you apologizing for? And what does that really change? Because the fact of the matter is, someone thought or didn't think enough of this young man to choose a more appropriate word, even in trying to have that conversation. Because I get what you were doing, Sarah, because I've been in a position very similar to yours
right.
on the radio, where it's my job to come up with the topics, you know, the juicy topics mm-hmm. that everyone wants to talk about. So I understand kind of like maybe what you were trying to do. But
right.
it's just, again, that privilege that exists in you, that exists in Holly, maybe not so much in Allison, but because, you know, she's got to do what she's got to do. You know, she's got to kind of go along to get along. That privilege that does not allow you or does not stop you from saying, let's think about this. Because this could have some really negative repercussions. And I just want to say this, not only for Michael Brown, but the problem that we have is that you create an idea or a perception of young Black men. And that's when folks have said, that's why folks have said we can't win. Because on one hand, we've got the media painting young Black men as irresponsible children, as irresponsible, criminal, undesirable, scary, undeserving,
scary.
You know, right, exactly. So we've got that. And so then we as, and I have an 11-year-old son, Black child, we even have to have this conversation with our children that our parents had with, I'm sure your parents had it with you. Sweetheart, you're going to have to be twice as good.
Better than.
To get
it's
half
the
as
better,
far.
It's the better than conversation. You have to be better than. You have to be twice as good to get half as far. And that's something that still, with my 11-year-old daughter, that I encourage and have to tell her every single
right.
day. She is the minority in her school. There are probably like 5, 6, 10 actual Black children. And I and the reason I say actual Black children is because there is a difference in a Black child descendant of slaves than an African child or a child from, you know, another country who comes here for a certain type of opportunity. There's a different speech and a different dialogue that you have with that child that I have to have with my child. But I think what you were saying is that you know, being Black, painting these pictures, you have Black men, like you said, who get lambasted in the media. The whole thing is a marketing and PR campaign to destroy our communities. And then when you do bootstrap and you do, it's always this thing, well, just do better.
I heard that, yeah.
There
you know,
is.
I got
white
that
people,
message a lot.
White people always say, oh, just do better. Well, then when you just do better,
you're
then
obnoxious.
You're obnoxious. You're obnoxious, you know? And then what's the sediddy, or, you know, you're out of line, or, oh, who do you think you are?
Yeah, you're bougie.
Yeah, all of these other things that, so it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of thing, but I'm going to do. Like, that's not going to stop me from doing, and that's also not going to stop me from encouraging other people to do, because we can't concern ourselves with someone else's false narrative of us. Because, I mean, why would I let somebody who from the beginning has made it obvious, and when I say somebody, you know, I don't have to isolate things, and I'm not going to mince my words, from the beginning has made it clear that you don't really value me. Why would I let someone who doesn't value me define my self-worth? Like, why is that something that's a priority for me? So, you know, what's happened for me is that, like, when she asked you about what came across and what came in your mind when they said obnoxious, you know, I kind of shoulder shrugged at it. Like, I mean, typical bullshit, right? Okay. I mean, and at this point, I think that when you said you don't accept apologies, I don't really accept apologies generally. I mean, from anybody and I mean, whoever, because once you've done it, the damage is there. So apologizing for it, I mean, remorse is one thing, but to tell me you're sorry at the point where, okay, 50 million people already saw this, because what happened for me, Sarah, because I have been associated with you, is on the day that it happened and things started kind of going viral, I started getting inbox messages like, is this the lady who you've been on the podcast with? Is this the lady you've been on the podcast with?
You had said that to me when we talked.
And thankfully, thankfully, I am who I am. Like, this is just who I am. I'm always honest. I'm always direct. You know, I'm always straightforward. And, you know, my people who follow me, my friends, they know that. But for to be associated with something where, you know, it's had a negative connotation, especially directed in, I guess, in a space where I've been an activist, like where I've said, no, Black people matter, you know, and should matter to everybody. And if they don't ever matter to them, they're going to always matter to me, because I am one and I create them and I was created from them. And that just fucking matters to me, you know, and I care. And it bothered me. It bothered me that you were associated with it. I looked at Allison and I felt bad for Allison, because being in media, you recognize it a lot of times, especially on when you're constantly doing a rundown and you're reading a teleprompter and a lot of things are going on.
Right.
Things happen in passing, you know, in a studio where you're like, wait, I didn't catch that until after I caught it.
Right.
And
right.
I'm sure that's kind of like where she was, because she did try to address it, but then it was too passive.
Right.
It was too passive. It should have been more forceful, like a, you know, what do you mean? Well, bitch, what do you mean? Like, it should have been more of that kind of response, because that's what people need.
Right. And it could have been it's not obnoxious.
Right.
I don't know that I would have had my child do it, but I don't know that obnoxious is the proper word to describe it. You know, that's what she could have said.
Well, and that's the thing. And you know, Shauna, you and I talked offline about basically, there are going to be people that just don't accept my apology. And I'm okay with that, because I understand now, having reflected and had been conversations with you and Hillary more about that. But, you know, in saying, like, a lot of people have asked me on Twitter, I mean, of course, I've gotten thousands of messages from, you know, people who have been longtime fans of mine, too, that are really disappointed and want, you know, an explanation. And so whether this helps or people believe it or not, but that was the thing. It's like, when you're in a newsroom, you're getting pitched stories so fast and everything is so what's happening now. And in this case, it was 10 minutes before showtime. This story got pitched to me, to a producer. It was like, okay, yeah, we'll do it. You know, like, nobody really stopped to think about, has everybody read the story? Is everyone, it was like, we got it, you know, let's do this. So that was what happened. And the problem was, there wasn't any intent. Is like, you know, I've tried on this show in the past, and I try in my lifetime, and sometimes you're just not aware that day, or not, you know, really awake. But I try to always have intent. And what am I doing? You know, I love to be funny. Like, I like to make people laugh and do silly things on my Instagram and, you know, pose who wore it best. But there was no intention going into that story. And I don't know if people will believe that or want to hear that, but that is the truth. And that's the thing for me that I feel like I wanted to come on here. I still have a lot of lessons and I'm still, like, learning and just taking this all in, because I've been in media for a long time. I've done stories on, you know, when I was on Hot 99.5 that went viral. But this was a different type of reaction. And that's something like I just can't lean away from. I have to lean into and I have to learn from. And I think I thought ignorantly, like, well, I've used this podcast and I've had women of color on and I've tried to have Joe Madison and stuff like that. But I think when you have moments like this, it makes you step back and go, all right, are you going to put your money where your mouth is? Because, you know, you've said that and you've allowed this platform, but you've been kind of passive about it. You know, like you were saying to me, Shauna, don't have you and Hillary on. Don't do this conversation unless there's action after the fact.
Exactly.
Absolutely. What's going to happen next? Because the other thing that okay, so I'm circling around because Shauna's making so many good points and I just want to make sure I don't lose my, because sometimes my dementia does start kicking in early. but... But you, I think what happened with you also is because you were sitting next to another white woman, you didn't recognize that you were behind enemy lines either. Like, I never, like, honestly, if I'm 100% honest, like, we've been around each other and we have mutual friends, but I still don't trust you. Right. I mean, and it's just the reality of my life. And I'm free enough to say that. I know a lot of people wouldn't say that. I don't think that will have a serious impact on our relationship to say that.
Sure.
I mean, I don't think you should trust me either. We don't know each other like well enough. Well,
wait, but I love your mutual friend. So if she trusts you.
But I've known that mutual friend now for 17 years. You see what I'm saying? Right. So the reason that I was willing to like talk to you and be open with you is because I've known that person for 17 years. And if she says you're cool, then okay. I'm willing to give it a chance. But the reality is I kind of like proceed with caution in a sense that, okay, Sarah's still white. And that's my reality. I don't know if you have that same reality too, Shauna, but I definitely, you know, feel that way. But with Holly, I feel like you sat there and you looked at her and you were like, oh, okay, but whatever. But the reality is somebody like Holly, I would never trust her.
No.
Like, never.
No.
Like, I mean, I've gone on with segments with her where she led the segment. And I can tell that, you know, with me, you're taking shots at me. And I just shoot back because I'm a shooter.
Right.
That's what I do. And I'm really good at it.
Well, and I, you know, look, in this whole thing, because I wanted to have you guys on to talk about kind of my actions and like and what I said, because for me, this has had a deep impact.
Well, you got set up, though.
Well, but I think, you know, in giving everybody the benefit of the doubt, I hope truly, because I don't think there was any malice going into this. I don't think there was anything but like, hey, we need some stories. What are we going to do? You know?
But see, I think that's, again, that white privilege.
That's privilege.
That's that privilege. That's I think, you know, I don't know.
No big deal.
It's okay. Because the thing is, any of them, you too, live in Washington, D.C. You are on the same social media networks that I'm on. You're watching the same news that I'm watching. You're living in the same world that I'm living in, just from a slightly different perspective.
Right.
So it is much easier to say, I don't think that there was any malice, but I can't look and say that. I can't say there was no malice because as a black woman who deals with white people, not all of them are bad. I've got some of my best friends are white, you know, but on a regular basis, and I see the microaggressions that occur every single time, you know, about my hair, about my skin, about my father, about going to Howard. You hear these little snarky remarks all the time, and you realize that even if they want me to believe that there's nothing behind it. I know that there is because, again,
always
I'm an
intention.
Adult.
There's
and I'm,
always
I'm
intention.
Careful about the words
and
that I say.
Absolutely. And you guys, that's why I'm having this conversation, because you're not alone. You know, I mean, I've got thousands and thousands of tweets and emails. So other people feel that way, too. I want to address a couple things. Shauna, your dad, Joe, has spoken to Michael's mom, who you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
How are they doing? Are they okay? And what did, you know, they've been both very gracious. They accepted my apology. They wrote me back and very nice. She was very sweet about it. I invited her on this podcast. I know they have a lot going on. So, you know, I hope someday I get to meet them in real life. But
yeah, I'm sure they're fine. I mean, I think she was okay. I mean, there's some question about how they're going to move forward because, you know, I know that Michael did an interview with Holly. Or did a Skype interview with
Holly.
That's
what he tweeted out.
That's what he said. And he said on a number of occasions that he is awaiting an apology from the network. either on behalf of you all or just on behalf of themselves. So he's really not sure exactly how he wants to move forward in terms of releasing the interview or doing another interview. I think, you know, his mom is doing all right. I can say this without even talking to either of them. They're going to be fine. Because while right. we continue to talk about this, and while you continue to feel bad about it, and other people continue not to feel bad about it and not want to acknowledge it, we still have this young black man who has a pick of 20 of the top universities
in the world. In the
full ride, right, exactly. Who got a call from the former right. president of the United States right. and was like, look, dog, right. here's how it's going down.
Right.
Go ahead, do what you have to do, and I guarantee you on the other side right. of all of this, you'll be fine. He will be fine, and that is the beauty and resilience of black people, and that has been the beauty and resilience of black people for all their whole lives. The fact that you are sitting right here across from two black women, you know, down the street from where they used to sell our ancestors shows you how resilient we are.
Right.
So I'm not so concerned about Michael Brown.
Michael will be fine.
Now, I'm concerned about the other young men because of negative perceptions and
incorrect. The other Mike Brown who right, lied right, dead right, in right. the street those over a incorrect. Cigarette or blunt or whatever it was that they claimed right. that
those
happened.
Incorrect perceptions so, are problematic. But yeah, I'm really more concerned, and I think perhaps because Michael Brown, this Michael Brown that we're talking about is intelligent, and perhaps his mother's, and his mother obviously is as well, is that, you know, beyond the apology, and let me just say this and then I'll let it go. The reason I said I didn't accept your apology, first of all, is because why are you apologizing to me?
Right.
Because you have not offended me. You offended them. You owe them an apology. And if
well,
they've
Michael
accepted
and
your,
his mother.
Yeah, Michael
yes,
and his mother
right.
an apology.
Right.
So to apologize to me really means nothing. I mean, because you've not done anything to me.
To you.
Now, here's the thing, though. I think when we start making public apologies, I see them sort of like when you're in an abusive relationship. You know, and your husband, you know, blacks your eye and then comes back to you and says, I'm so
That's why
sorry.
I don't accept them,
you know,
mugs.
The sorry doesn't take away the pain. The sorry doesn't doesn't speed up the physical healing. The only way anyone would even consider remaining in any kind of relationship or having any kind of interaction with someone who is abusive, and racism is a violent form of abuse, is by saying, OK, you need to acknowledge that there is a problem.
Right.
You need to get help for your problem. And then you need to show me over the course of a period of time that I feel comfortable that this change is long lasting and permanent. And so that's why I said to you, we can have a conversation. And to what you were asking, Hillary, I don't know, Sarah.
Right.
This is my first time ever laying eyes on her in person. So I don't know her. We had a conversation right. based on a mutual friend right. asking me to do it. So when I said to you that I'd come on and have a conversation with you, I said the same thing to you that I say to all of my other white friends. Don't ask me what I can do, and then I tell you what to do, and then you don't do it.
Right.
The first thing I tell my friends all the time is go to your racist girlfriends, your dad,
and
your mom,
her.
Your uncle, your yes. auntie, and check their asses and let yeah. them know it's inappropriate. And that I am not, because I am for the cause,
right.
not the black cause, not the feminine cause, for the human cause,
right.
I am not going to sit back and allow you to disrespect anyone because I had two really nice, beautiful, intelligent black women, one of which has a daughter and the other of which has a son at my table. They spoke to me with respect, and I will not allow you to disrespect them by disrespecting everything they represent.
Right. It's humanity.
It's humanity. It's
and
humanity.
I think that for people who have hate in them, they don't look at everyone and classify them
right.
within the guise of humanity. And so that's the main issue.
Right.
And wait, but I got to go back to the thing where you said Holly already did a Skype interview with the kid.
Yeah, he tweeted that. Yes.
But so, he won't let her release it.
He wants the apology.
If that was done prior to that, then it was just an opportunity for it was. Like, I can't wait to say something ugly. Let me get on the back end of saying something. If you've already done an interview, if I sit down and talk to you, I've talked to you today, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to you today. If
you
I
have,
go out of
but
here
here's the thing.
And say something ugly.
And I want you, mm-hmm. and I, you know, look, obviously this, like we've talked about, it sparked a bigger thing. I told you guys I wanted you to come on and talk openly, but I also want you to talk about my feelings mm-hmm. because I, you know, I love everyone there. I don't want to speak for anybody else. So I want to talk about my actions and how I can move forward. My audience has always known me to be open to talk about things. So I have one other question about seeing color, because one of the emails, and I want to read one of the messages I got, and then I want you to tell me what I can do to actually take action. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that one of the emails I got over time, over the past 10 days, was that I need to actually see color, that you need to be aware of people's color and think, which I think is what you're telling me. I naively think, oh, well, I don't want to see color. You know, I'm not judging anyone.
Well, that's automatically
all that.
Saying something negative, because what's the problem? Like, what's the problem with seeing color? Like, because that means that your perception.
So do you agree with that or disagree?
I absolutely 100% agree with
Okay,
it.
So be conscious of color to stand up for people, because that's basically what I was getting a lot of emails and messages.
Everybody has that's the thing about, okay, so let's look at it like this, right? So when you go to the store, you have bananas, right? Or you have fruits and vegetables. Don't you pick your fruits and vegetables based on, like, you know, how they look, like,
right.
You know, if it's ripe or if it's not ripe enough or if it's too ripe, right? So all of those things mean something differently to you. Well, when you recognize, like, that you see color and you recognize, well, Black people have, you know, these issues and people treat them like this, it makes you more compassionate. It makes you more empathetic and aware. Like, you said something earlier that I thought was hilarious. You said, you know, I wasn't awake. You know, we say stay woke, right? Like,
yes,
that's the real shit we say. Like, you said I wasn't awake. You're not awake. But right now, we're over here with the clap, clap. Wake up,
Well,
Sarah.
That's really what it was. So I mean, it was a big slap in the face. There's no doubt to me, for sure.
And I'm always sensitive. It's just kind of like what you said about, you know, white friends or whatever. When I bring, like, white people around my Black friends, I'm always sensitive to the things that they say. Like, because I know, you know, where I'm willing to just step out there and say, wait, bruh, that's not okay. You know, I'm bringing someone who's delicate into a situation. Like, we have real shit going on in our brains that we have to process all the time. Post-traumatic slave syndrome is real. Like, I'm on edge. Like, if you say the wrong thing to me, Sarah, I could just, like, go off just based on something inside of me that, like, has not yet been dealt with. Like, and I own that and I accept that and I'm okay with that. But I think that walking around expecting me to just be nice to you for the sake of, like, oh, I'm a good person. Like, I don't owe you that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And when you do something wrong, I am the person who's going to say, that's not okay.
And by
and
the
if
way,
we're friends, you'll accept that.
I want to get people to, because a lot of people are commenting
okay,
on Facebook.
Talk
we're
to the
live
people.
On Facebook.
I like that.
You can share this Facebook link. I'm having an open conversation about the comments that I made about Michael Brown that went viral over the past week. You can share it. And then also, if you have questions for Shauna or Hillary Younger, my guest today, Shauna is here. She is a media personality as well, worked for Sirius XM. Her dad is also legendary civil rights activist, Joe Madison. Hillary Younger is here. She's a former reality show on Design Stars TV personality. She's also an expert on Black Twitter, which I'm now becoming. And that's a whole nother conversation we were having, too, is what is Black Twitter? You were kind of.
Yeah, it was. But if you don't mind, I want to go back to what you mentioned about seeing color and why it is important that you see color.
Right, because I want to know moving forward what I need to.
And to also use the analogy that you did about when you go into a grocery store. So when you go into a grocery store and you are looking at bananas, you're looking at colors and you're making a value determination based upon the color, right? So in a sense, you don't want to go that approach because you don't want to say, oh, the black banana is spoiled. The green banana is, you know, whatever, not ripe enough. And that perfect yellow banana with just maybe a little touch of brown is the one that I want. We don't want to approach the way a humanity like that. What we want to approach it to is, it's like asparagus. I don't know if you all eat asparagus. So I love asparagus. And so I knew that asparagus came in green. And then I found out that there's also white asparagus. And then I found out that there was purple asparagus. And I was like, oh, wow, this is awesome. And they pretty much, they have little differences, but for the most part, it's all asparagus. And so the thing is, you can choose a color, not because necessarily you want to make a value judgment on whether or not purple is spoiled spoiled and white is unripe or is not ripe enough, but just because you know that they're different and you want to experience them all and you respect them all. So when it comes to seeing color, I want you to see me as a Black woman because I am a Black woman. And there's a lot that comes with that. That's not just the fact that I am a descendant of a slave. Oh, it is also that, you know, I carry myself a little differently. My hair is coiffed a little differently. Right. My skin is this beautiful brown color that I love. There's so much that comes with that. So don't ignore that, because I want you to see that. But what I want you to do beyond see that is respect it.
I understand that. Well, I'm understanding that.
Right.
I feel like
that's
in that moment,
that's what I want you to see.
So I also think that's fake. I think that when people say that I don't see color, well, then you're gonna erase history now. Like, we're gonna have to forget. Because at what point did we stop seeing color? Like, at what point? Because you don't see color, but clearly there are people around you who do.
Sure.
So do you go when you talk to your friends or family? Do you say, well, do you see color? Or is there a survey done, and how do we address and identify?
Right.
Because this is a very hard space to navigate, especially with the world being so global now. Now, how do we stop seeing? When do we stop
and you
seeing
don't.
It?
You don't stop seeing
when
colors.
When do we stop seeing color?
You don't.
And
now
you're erasing
have.
History when we
exactly.
stop seeing color. And I'm not willing to do that.
And you never have and you never will, because the fact of the matter is we were all created differently for a reason, and that we all experience this world differently in the reason. Now, here's the thing, historically, and then I'll get off of this. Historically, the thing that makes people of color more alike than different is that we have all experienced the world through the filter of white supremacy. So that in and of itself, but that's real deep. I don't want to dig that hole right now.
Okay.
But the fact
well, just
is,
like that brown banana, you're ready for something.
Exactly.
You're
so
ready.
Right. So
you're ready.
Exactly. So that's that part. So yes, you can see color. You can see color and respect it and celebrate it and check yourself every time you have a perception. Just like when I walked in here, like Hillary said, I was like, okay, I'm about to go in here and talk to this white girl. And you know, and here's the thing. And a lot of times I won't. And I have to, you know, talk to myself through this, though I know my reasons. You know, I won't engage a group of white women in the same way that I will engage a mixed group of women or a group of Black women, because I'm like, all right, as soon as I say something that she doesn't like and she starts crying, because this is what Black people say, oh my God, white woman tears. The most powerful thing on the face of the earth is a white woman's tears.
I want to harvest some in
man.
This.
I mean, good thing
so
I better not cry.
If you do, I need them.
Honey, historically, Black men have been castrated and hung from trees because some white woman cried. So this is part of the reason why I am very careful about how I interact. But I do, as a human being who wants everyone else to see me as a human being, I have to step back and say, okay, maybe I'll have that in the back of my mind, but that will not be I won't bring it to the forefront of my mind in the way that I interact with you. I will give you what I want you to give my son when you see him on the street in your neighborhood, and that is the benefit of the doubt.
That's amazing. Oh, my God. And by the way, I'm not crying, but I'm getting inundated. I'm
like,
not.
Girl, get the cup.
Girl, get the damn cup out. Cry.
I'm not crying. But
don't you waste one, because I need them. I live in a white neighborhood. I need them.
Okay, I'm not crying. I'm getting tons of great response. Okay. Lots of people are on the Facebook. You can share the Facebook right now. Eddie Stahl says, I love this. It's a very difficult conversation.
It is tough.
I'm super grateful.
Not for me.
No, I'm super grateful to both. It's hard for me to hear this because, yeah, you don't hear it, and people aren't real. And the discussion around race is a really tricky one. And especially for white women, you know, and white people in general. But it is a tough one to have. And it like stings me at the core, because
well, everyone wants to feel like they're a good person.
Right.
Who doesn't want to feel like a good person?
Eddie says, very tough conversation, but this one happens to really be changing behavior, especially about race. Felicia says, this is what it looks like to have an honest conversation about something that is very difficult to talk about, race and our personal behavior. I'm so glad to see you guys doing this today. Sarah says, seeing color equals recognizing someone's background, history, culture. Ignoring it can come off as ignoring those differences, which so often are used as reasons for them to be treated differently. Mm-hmm. So that's a good way to sum it up. Mm-hmm. I got this one too, because I wanted you guys to speak about, Shauna, you have a son. We all know what's happening with the two men at Starbucks in Philadelphia. This woman, Mia, who works here in DC in education, wrote this message to me, which was one of the tipping points for me wanting to have this conversation today. Mia said, I wish you had a better understanding, Sarah, of how to navigate navigate as a person of color in America. I wish you knew what it felt like to see constant images on the news of Black and brown people being shot and harassed by their own communities and those charged with protecting them. I wish you had a better understanding of the insurmountable challenges teachers and parents face when preparing students for their lives post-high school. I wish you know how frustrating it is to get a barrage of messages on one side that Black boys are thugs and a danger to society and are men, even at age 12. Another barrage of messages on the other side that preach the gospel of personal responsibility and bootstrap pulling up, which both of you touched upon. And then to be beyond successful and be called ridiculous and obnoxious, it's hurtful. But more than that, it's frustrating. I wish you no ill will. I'm glad that you and everyone else on this platform are having this discussion here today. And I hope it results in a good thing. So thank you, Mia. I really appreciate you having that conversation and having this conversation with me.
Right. And I agree. And I just want to say something to you. And I'm coming to you now as the mother of a son. And Hillary, I know as the mother of a young Black girl, we cannot also pretend like a lot of the issues that are facing our young men are not facing our women, because our girls are going through it too.
Is a whole dead woman.
Patriarchy will not allow us to talk about women. But as a son, I want to give you an example of something that just happened to me. And then I'll give you I'll tell you exactly what I would like for you to do.
Okay.
So, My mother-in-law, I went to Chicago. So my husband is from Chicago. And so we went to go visit his mother-in-law. And his mother-in-law lives in this very exclusive suburb outside of Chicago, predominantly white with a little Black speckle here and there. So my son and my bonus son were hanging out and they were bored. And they said, well, can we go walk around the neighborhood? So here I am now. We're not on the west side of Chicago. We're not on the south side of Chicago. So I'm not concerned about whether or not he's going to get caught in the crossfire or anything like this. I hesitate because I think to myself, okay, if I let these two young Black boys out in this predominantly white neighborhood, what is the likelihood that they will be harassed, perceived as a threat because they don't live here and people are not familiar with them, and they're not going to be given the benefit of the doubt. Nobody's going to say, oh, those are Margie's grandchildren. They're all going to be like, oh, these two young Black men that I've never seen before are out here. So I said, okay. And I immediately was like, all right, God, I'm going to need you to just cover them and keep them, you know, and a big, you know, Black baby Jesus, please keep my children. So I let them out, and I'm on the phone looking out of the window. And I remember this struck me as I saw what I thought was like a neighborhood watch truck. It turned out to be something else, but at the time I thought it was a neighborhood watch truck. And it was coming down the street, and it went right to the cross street where I knew the boys were. And it pulled up to the cross street, it stopped, then it backed up, turned around, and then went down that street. I was so scared because I was like, oh my God, they're about to have an encounter. Wow. With what I thought was neighborhood security, that I ran out of the house in my pajamas, no shoes, without a thought, locked myself out of the house, it turns out, in Chicago in the winter, because I was so afraid for my children. Not because they're in the hood, but because they are in this nice neighborhood, and because I've seen so many times, because this is essentially what happened with Trayvon Martin, please, let's keep it real,
absolutely,
was that he was in a neighborhood where the neighbors were unfamiliar with him. Yeah. And he was immediately tagged as being a menace. And so, you know, he lost his life as a result. So I was afraid for my sons. This very same thing happened not too far from where I'm from in Rochester, Michigan. I'm from Detroit originally, where this young man misses his bus. He goes and knocks on the door.
This is another story.
Young Black man, 14 years old, misses his bus, and he doesn't know how to get to where he's going. I don't remember if he was going to school or not, but he misses his bus, and so he goes and knocks on the door. And this is sort of, again, a white suburb, you know. He knocks on the door, and this white woman answers the door and says, oh my God, what are you doing? Trying to rob me. She screams. Her husband comes running out of the back with a gun. And it is only by the grace of God and the fact that the safety was on that gun that that boy lived to tell the story. Because he was going to kill that child for knocking on his door and asking for directions. Why? Because the immediate perception that his wife had was, this young Black man is at my door. He must be trouble.
You know
that
why?
Is the perception.
Because the media is, the only, because if you never interacted with black people,
right,
then how do you know?
Right.
How do you know all of it? Because you sit up and you watch TV and the media feeds you all this trash and you eat and that's what you think. That's right. that's what's in your mind. And you already are geared to hate anyway. Like, it's already in your mind to isolate yourself, to separate yourself, to not be a part of, to go over here. We have to be real. The first thing that you have to do is to be real about this entire country. Let's start at the beginning. What is America?
Right.
That's what it is.
Well, it was based on slavery.
That's we built this motherfucker.
Right. Like, and we had a civil war over it.
And
you know,
maybe.
And then let's not forget the people that were here before they even brought us
there
over.
There we go.
I mean, it's not even built on slavery.
Right.
It's built on the genocide.
Let's start with the genocide and all
do
that.
You all live it. You're activists. You see it. I mean, Shawnee, you really see it with your dad, who does a show on SiriusXM every day. Do you guys think things are getting any better?
No.
Okay, you don't.
No.
And
Black men just got kicked out of Starbucks for doing something that white boys do every single day of their lives.
Why do you think that there is, because the other thing I've heard a lot, I've heard, you know, stand up for black men, black people, give them the benefit of the doubt. And one of the things I've heard with the Starbucks story that's been so frustrating for people is believe that there is anything else to the story. And white people in general have a hard time going, well, everybody, you know, the commenting and reading that I've done on that story has been a lot of times people are like, oh, well, there's got to be more to the story of the two guys who are arrested at Starbucks. And a lot of people are saying, no, there isn't more to the story. That's what you live with as a person of color every single day.
Because that forces them to check their bias. So that's when I was going to go back to you and tell you, okay, Sarah, now you're asking me, what can I do? Now you have a platform.
Right.
This is step one. Okay, this is step one. But now every time, just like if you go on to my Facebook.
I don't think you need the answers from me, Sarah. I think that you probably have the answers about what to do. How am I answering the question?
Well, you're making an assumption. See, I don't make assumptions with them. I let them know what I want them to do.
I think it's fake a lot of the time.
Well, maybe it is. But this is what I was saying to her. So now if I make an assumption and I don't get anything out of it, right, then I can always go back and be like, oh, I made an incorrect assumption. Mm-hmm. If I tell you, it's like my son, you know what I mean? If I tell you every Saturday, clean the bathroom, don't come back to me 3 weeks later and say, I didn't know.
What do you want me to do?
Right. I told you what to do. Now, the fact that you didn't do it now shows me that you really don't care about what I'm saying. And this is coming from my real life. Shout out, Jazzy. But the thing is, if I say to you, okay, you have this platform. So every time a story like a Michael, and this is really simple. This doesn't solve the problem by any means. This is step one of 100.
Many, right.
Okay. So the next time you see a story like a Michael Brown, not your story, not the story you were part of, but the original story, then post that up as a celebration of young black men. You understand? The next time you see the story about, you know, a young girl who has written 5 children's books that celebrate black hair and what it means to be a black girl and is a distribution deal and a publishing deal, post that. Like, don't let every story that a black person shows up in across your platform be a negative one.
I have a real question that kind of will, like, okay, so this is a question that I have, and it's like, you said you didn't see color, and I get the whole thing, and I think that this will resolve some things for your audience and for mine and for Shauna's too. So if that had been a young white boy who you guys were doing the story about, would you have used the same word?
A lot of people have asked that.
Yeah, would you have said the same thing?
I think we would have, because really it was like, when this story was pitched, it was like, hey, how many schools are too many? You know, like, oh, this, you know, this kid got into 20, and, you know, the college... Again, Shauna educated me, and I should have done that myself.
I'm not right about the app.
That's all changed from the days when we had to do written essays and all that crap.
You got to fill them out one by one when I
went. Right. So,
which in and of itself would have made it even more impressive.
With the money order. Because in my mind, I'm thinking like, if mama went and got 20, my mama would have been like, look, if you don't get in, you're going to the military.
Which would have made it even It would have made it even more impressive if he had done it.
Yeah.
Application by application.
Holy shit.
So once again, that even makes it. See, to me, if you're even going to have that question, and again, this just kind of goes back with what you learn when you're in this business. Okay, you learn, you do your research, and you say, hey, there's an app that allows you to just do it like this, and then there's an old school way.
That's what he did.
Which is a better way.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, there's so many different ways to approach it. So to take that approach is what makes people question your motives.
And I think we would have, because that the story was coming from, is 20 too many? the, you know, it
well,
went off the rails.
I challenge Fox and even you. Let's find a story.
Let's challenge me.
Let's challenge you. Well, I mean, I can challenge who I want to. I get that you're saying it, but I'm just saying for me, the way to do it is to find another story with a white kid, girl, boy, whoever, and then let's just say another obnoxious kid.
Right. Is doing it again.
Here it is again. Like, I mean, let's see if that is something that we're willing to do. And if we're not willing to do that, then let's just say that now, okay, let's put this in the other stack of 300 million things that are racist in America. I mean, I kind of feel like you're not willing to do that, then there's no reversing it. We got to balance the scale.
Well, I personally don't want to tear down any more kids.
Well, no, like, then, it's already been done. I mean, for me, that's how I feel. I'm Hammurabi's code, 100%. An eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. You cut off my finger, I cut off your finger. Now we're even. I mean, that's the only way I feel like we balance it out. Like, if I'm on the scale and I got an extra finger and you don't have a finger, then I'm like this on the scale. I mean, it just makes sense. So let's give me your finger, and then we're back to here, right?
Right. No, so, I understand your point of view. I like Shauna's point of view better. Sorry.
Well, you want your finger. You want to keep your
fingers. But also, let's be clear, right, that I too believe in consequence. Because, one, I come from, and as you mentioned, I'm a storyteller. So I do these pop-up storytelling events around the region. And we recently did one that we called Rep Your Hood, where we had folks from all over the city come and tell stories sort of about their hometown. And so I told a story about growing up in Detroit. And I grew up in Detroit in, I'm old. So I grew up in Detroit in, like, you know, the early 1980s. And so, you know, at the time, we had this mayor. His name was Coleman Young. And he was a phenomenal. I mean, he was like blackety, blackety, black. Right. In terms of his policies and his beliefs and his thinking. And so he was like, listen, what you're not going to do is come up into this majority black city, regardless of what the situation is, and disrespect us. So there were a number of situations, a number of stories that things that happened while I was growing up that upset white people tremendously. And a lot of them had to do with white folks kind of, you know, calling black folks niggas and making certain comments and there being dire consequences. In one case, this one white woman got beat down, like beat to the ground because she, you know, she went out, came out her mouth and called this black girl the N-word. And so and the black girls got off. They got off and everybody's like, oh, my God, you know, we live in this city where, you know, a black girl can, you know, beat this white woman down. And for what a word? No, because what the city understands and what I understand is that word is an act of violence. Mm. Your aggression against me is an act of violence. What you all did, regardless of whether or not it was your intention or your understanding, right, was an act of violence. And so there needs to be a consequence to that. Trevor Noah told a story recently. I saw it on Facebook about how in South Africa, this woman got put in jail for calling a police officer. I can't remember what the name is for black people there. Is it Kafur or something like that?
Okay.
She got put in jail. There was a real consequence for her racism because they identified racism as violence. So while
South Africa is going hard right now,
and they are. And so I think here in the United States, I think there ought to be consequence. And so whatever that consequence is for you, you know, that's fine. What the consequence is for anyone else, I believe that, you know, a firing, that might be it. A slap on the hand, that might be it. You know, you having to go out and do some community service. I don't know. Jail, I don't know, and I don't care what it is because that's not for me to determine. But there has to be, and you are right, Hillary, a consequence for this. Otherwise, why would anybody stop? Do you know why there's certain people at that network right now who are sitting like, I don't care. I'm not going to apologize.
Nothing's going to happen.
Because nothing's going to happen to them. Why would they apologize? Why?
And I want to have you on the show to talk about
I
me.
Understand.
And you know, it's your opinion and it's been the opinion of the audience. And we've heard it, you know, so whatever they're doing is their thing. What I'm doing is for me and for my platform. And I don't feel like it's right for me to not have this conversation and to try to do better and advance the cause with the platform that I have. So
exactly.
That's why I really
exactly
and I guess
what I'm trying to say to bring it back around again, I'm not trying to distinguish you from anyone else, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that you said you know what I gave you was not a consequence,
right? Right.
What I gave you was an idea. What Hillary is saying is that there has to be a consequence. And so what I'm saying is, while you liked my idea, it's because it was not a consequence. Right. But I still believe that there should be a consequence. Now, I'm not here to say what it should be because I don't know. Right. I've not thought it through that far. But the thing is, I respect the fact that you say, okay, this was a misstep. This was a problem. Perhaps, you know, I need to do some soul searching. And maybe that is enough of a consequence for you, because I don't know what's going on internally with you. I don't know what happens when you go to bed at night, whether or not you beat yourself up or you just drink a glass of wine and go to sleep. I don't know.
Right.
But so that's why I don't. But Hillary is right. There has to be overall something beyond just an apology. There has to be something that holds you accountable. That's why sometimes people get community service when they do something. It's not just to punish you, but it's also to get you to understand, to
learn.
Go into the community, to learn and to understand how your actions affect
people.
Right.
A larger community.
And that's what I want to do. That's what I want to do. And that's what I wanted to talk about today. You guys have been amazing. And I'm really, really grateful that you were here. And I'm grateful to take the next steps of sharing stories that celebrate young men of color, young women of color. And I know my audience will keep me honest.
Or just stop talking about people of color.
Or stop talking about people of color.
Well, not in that way. I'm just saying it doesn't have to be... You know,
in a
right.
way of debating their accolades.
Absolutely.
Got it.
Because unless you talk about, like I said, unless you come back on the podcast, you find this girl or boy and be like, look, girl or boy, I'm sorry I got to do this, but you're obnoxious, then
right.
it's still going to be off. Yeah, it's still going to be off for me because I'm looking, that's what I'm doing next. I'm finding all the white kids who got into a myriad of schools and I'm posting them online and I'm saying obnoxious. .! After all of them.
Well,
and have the difficult conversation with your white counterparts. Have that conversation. Don't just have it with us.
Right.
You understand? Because we're on it's good. We're on the side that we're on. But if you now get what we say and you go back to your girlfriends and you say, hey, I have this conversation, have a conversation with them. Show up the next time that you see these black folks marching down U Street, the next time you see them talking about Black Lives Matter, you know what I mean? Don't just post it. Get out there, because there are white people who are doing it. I mentioned this to you recently with Cynthia Nixon running for governor of New York. You know what I mean? She's doing something. And if right now the only thing she can do, because she's only a candidate, is to bring attention and awareness to certain issues like the mass incarceration of black people for crimes
marijuana.
Having to do with marijuana that's now being legalized, then that's what you do. That is part of being, that is about being part of the solution. It is possible, but Cynthia Nixon had to take that chance. There are going to be people who look at her like, girl, why would you even do that?
We
that's not even about
you.
Sex
in the city
that's
again.
Fine. That is part of what it means if you are truly, genuinely.
Right. And we talked about that.
Wanting
change.
To be part of a solution.
Be a change agent. Like, actually, like, do the actual work. I mean...
Do the work. I want to end it there because I think that you guys have made some amazing points. And I think as I still, you know, deal with this and process it, I have to do that and reflect on the work and reflect on the next steps. So I'm very, very grateful that you were here and were so honest and open with me. So, Hillary, thank you. Where can people follow you and find you?
Okay, here we go again. So I am on Instagram. I am Habitually Hillary. Habitually Hillary, and Hillary is H-I-L-A-R-I. Habitually Hillary, you can find me on all my social media platforms at Habitually Hillary. That's me.
All right.
Shauna, where can people find you and follow you?
I am across most of them, most of the social media platforms at I am Shauna Renee. That's S-H-A-W-N-A-R-E-N-E-E.
Perfect. I love it. You guys, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I really appreciate your comments. You can keep them coming on my Facebook and be sure to share the conversation. I hope today is the start of taking action, like you said,
indeed.
Being different. Thank you, guys. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
It's a podcast, not a cast pod. Hey, Rage, every day she'll make you say, oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
She got the scoop. On pop culture news, so grab a drink. It ain't what you think. It's Sarah and the crew.